This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
What's next for Huawei? From Marketplace in Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams in for David Brancaccio. The Trump administration has a big decision to make today on Huawei, the Chinese telecom giant. The administration blacklisted Huawei earlier this year, citing national security concerns. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer joins me now live in Washington. And Nancy, what's happening today?
Well, today a temporary license for Huawei expires. And that license allows Huawei to keep buying components like computer chips from U.S. companies. The White House issued an executive order blacklisting Huawei back in May, so now the U.S. government can block American companies from using Huawei products. Huawei is one of the leading manufacturers of equipment needed for 5G networks, and another part of the order said Huawei couldn't buy components from U.S. suppliers. The temporary license expiring today allowed Huawei to keep making those purchases.
So will this license be renewed?
Hard to say. There were reports late last week that the Commerce Department would give Huawei another temporary license. White House economic advisor Larry Kudlow said yesterday on NBC the license would be extended for another 3 months. But later yesterday, President Trump told reporters he doesn't want to do business with Huawei because it's a national security threat. Trump said small parts of Huawei's business could be exempted from the blacklisting, but he added that would be very complicated.
Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer, thank you.
You're welcome.
And the Trump administration also wants to change the way the government handles cases of potential housing discrimination. The Department of Housing and Urban Development is proposing a change that would set a higher bar to file civil rights lawsuits when someone suspects they've been the victim of discrimination. Right now, developers and governments can be held liable if a policy has even an unintentional discriminatory effect. Marketplace's Ben Bradford reports the administration and civil rights groups are at odds over how much it should take to prove that discrimination.
The new proposed rule would require plaintiffs to show that a policy is not only discriminatory, but also arbitrary before a case can proceed.
These changes are designed to make it much more difficult, if not impossible, to challenge and overcome discriminatory effects.
Diane Yentel at the National Low Income Housing Coalition says the Fair Housing Act is designed to protect minorities from being locked out of neighborhoods. Paul Compton is general counsel at the Department of Housing and Urban Development. He says developers and local governments need incentives to invest in housing with less fear of lawsuits.
It is not the department's role to broadly dictate into the thousands of communities across America the local decisions that are made in good faith by officials there.
Civil rights groups say it's already hard enough to prove implicit housing discrimination. A 2013 Tulane University study found only 20% of cases succeed under the current rule. I'm Ben Bradford for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. The FTSE in London is up 1%. That's up 71 points. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are all up in the 0.9% to 1% range, with the Dow futures up 243 points. The 10-year Treasury yield is up at 1.611%. Today and tomorrow, some of the 2020 presidential candidates will take the stage in Sioux City, Iowa, to discuss issues affecting Native Americans. It's the first presidential forum to focus entirely on America's indigenous communities. Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, and Julian Castro are among the attendees. On Friday, Elizabeth Warren released several policy proposals aimed at channeling more funding to programs important to Indian country. We'll take this moment to look at some of the economic issues facing targeting Native American voters. For that, I'm joined by Patrice Kunesh of the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis's Center for Indian Country Development. Patrice, welcome to the program.
Happy to be here.
What are some of the economic issues that are top of mind for Native American voters?
I think at the top of the list are treaties and trust responsibilities. For decades now, there's been severe underfunding of these federal obligations that provide the basic means for survival on American Indian reservations. And that has real impact on infrastructure.
Let's talk specifically about infrastructure. What are some of the conditions like on the reservations right now?
When I think of infrastructure, I mean the roads and bridges, water systems for clean water, broadband. We need broadband and internet connections for businesses, households, and government services. There's a very low rate of access in many areas of Indian country.
Lots of the candidates have talked about economic inequality and economic mobility. How does that show up in Indian country?
Most remarkably and sadly, Native women experience the largest disparities in intergenerational mobility. But quite interesting, we found that Native kids on or near the reservations show greater upward mobility. So we need to know what's really going on there because, reservations may not be the commonly charged negative predictor of economic outcomes for Native kids. There's something there that I think is hinged on culture and community and identity.
What are some of the factors feeding into this struggle for economic mobility?
I think if you want to understand wealth and inequality in Indian country, I think you have to understand the Native land loss of not just losing a piece of land, but losing our home. So we need to understand that backstory. And so when we look at not just the land loss, but the way of life that was lost forever, we're continuing to see ripple effects very, very deeply in our communities.
Patrice Kunesh is director of the Center for Indian Country Development at the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And in Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.